This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
So if we can start, just give us your full name and kind of your role or self-described role. I know you're a YouTuber, but anything else that adds on to that as well?
So my name is Mohammed Hijab. And in addition to being a YouTuber, as you've mentioned, I also do like lecturing. So I do that in our own institute in the UK in London called the Sapience Institute, and also in various other places. For instance, I'm affiliated to a university in America called Mishka University, which I'm also doing part-time lecturing for. So that's what I do.
Great, thank you for that. So we'll move on to your platform. You've got, I think, over 700,000 YouTube subscribers now. What kind of made you start on YouTube, and the kind of what was the space that you were trying to infiltrate with that?
Well, I mean, I think it was an organic process. I was speaking to people from all different kind of walks of life. I've spoken to almost a representative from every world religion. I've spoken to people from all kinds of sexual background and these kinds of things. And basically, we have discussions and debates, some of which have been with high, notable individuals, notorious individuals, some of which have been with the general public. And to be honest with you, it's picked up traction, and that's all it's been, really.
Did you expect to make such an impact with your channel?
Yeah, I did, because I knew what kind of thing we had to offer. And when you know what you have to offer, in fact, in terms of, for example, the content that we're providing, I knew that it was going to go far and wide, especially in Muslim communities, because it's cutting-edge information, which I've tried to at least synthesize between secular knowledge, because I've got a background in like some secular fields, and also religious knowledge, which I've also got a background in, academic background in. So I knew that when you put these two things together, that people will benefit from that. And so that's what happened. And we say Alhamdulillah, which is praise be to God for that.
Great. And we'll move on. You mentioned that you have some influential figures, Undertate being one of them. You were one of the first that Undertate came on your podcast, and you spoke about his conversion to Islam. What was the intention of having him? You know his reputation, you know he's a notable figure. So what did you want to get from him when you decided to give him a platform on your YouTube channel?
Before we arranged it, actually, he wasn't a Muslim just yet. And so, when I first decided to have a conversation with him, it was going to be more, if you like, inquisitive or even interrogative, based on some of the things that he said in the past, some of the inconsistencies that I've seen in some of the thing, prescriptions and descriptions or diagnoses and so on. But because he turned Muslim, in our faith, we have a belief that when someone becomes Muslim, their spiritual slate is wiped clean. So it ended up being much more friendly, much more conciliatory, much more harmonious, and that is because we believe everybody has a chance to amend for their ways, and anyone can have a chance for a second chance. And so he clarified, even notwithstanding that, he did clarify some of the things that were most problematic, in his output in the past. Whether people will be convinced with that is a question. I personally was convinced with that. I met him personally. I saw him in private, and he seemed to me like an authentic figure. So now that he's become a Muslim person, I do believe that things will change even more, but that's yet to be seen.
You've touched a bit on that, that forgiveness is a massive part of when you do convert, you have that slate wiped clean. Some people might not accept that, whereas his previous life, he was living a very haram lifestyle, fast cars, women, being arrogant about that and trying to promote his lifestyle to other people. Does that mean that all of that should be forgotten now?
I mean, fast cars are not haram. I mean, although if you use the money...
In terms of like the arrogance of his lifestyle.
Yeah, I get what you mean. I'm just
showing off his wealth.
I'm just clarifying the point. I mean, certainly, but... I think that, look, there are two things. You touch upon a good point, which is that your spiritual slate is wiped clean. As for those things which relate to the rights of people, clearly that's not wiped clean. And that's something, although from God can forgive you for it, the people don't necessarily need to forgive you for that. And so certainly there is work still to be done. It doesn't mean just because he has become Muslim that everything, that he gets a get-out-of-jail-free card. No pun intended. I mean, this is obviously because he's in prison. But the point I'm making is that, yeah, I mean, I'm saying that he should certainly, if there's anything that he's done in the past or continues to have, we as Muslim people, like, for example, as you mentioned, casinos or and all those things, that should be gotten away, that should be gotten rid of. But having said that, I haven't spoken to him. It seems like he's in the process of doing that, if not has done that already, especially with, for example, the webcam business. I've spoken to him and his team, and they've told me that that's a thing of the past. So as I said, Islam is a religion which attempts to rectify the human condition. And so since he's new to it, I think it's only fair as a Muslim community that we give him time to make these appropriate changes. And I think that's what he's doing.
And given that you and Ante, I would say, he now has a very young Muslim, predominantly male following, does that not concern you, the Tate effect that has had on the wider community outside of the Muslim community, maybe in schools and things, people educating on how misogyny is not to be glamorized and people shouldn't talk about women in that way? Are you worried about the association now that he has converted to Islam, that people will try to draw a narrative out of that?
What was the first thing you mentioned about Muslim male followers?
Like, I would say that he now has gained quite a few because of his conversion to Islam, and your following is, you would say, like, quite predominantly young Muslim guys. Yeah, there's, both of you have similar followings and similar power and influence within that. Do you worry that the Tate effect will carry on and your followers will see that and think, oh, okay, so he's a friend of Tate's, he's supporting him in some way by having him on his platform, it must be mean that Tate and all of his past views could be okay because they might not have heard the context that you're speaking of now, I've met him in person, etc., etc.
You've touched upon many different points there. I mean, depending on my personal following, depending on what platform we're talking about, like, because I've got access to my own demographics, there are some platforms which I've got almost an even, I've got 60-40 split, for example. So I don't know if it is predominant in that sense, it's a majority, but it's not as much as people maybe think it is from the one side. And I think you'll be surprised to know that a lot of females actually follow Andrew Tate as well. And once again, don't think it's as disproportionate as many people think, or asymmetrical as people think it is. In regards to your comments about misogyny, I don't know what the definition of misogyny that we're employing here is. Obviously, the dictionary definition of misogyny is the hatred of women, but that takes different forms depending on what ideological kind of background you're coming from. If someone comes from a feminist perspective, once again, misogyny will have a different flavor. Even within feminism, there's discussion, second wave, third wave in particular, queer theory, LGBTQ theory. And so what is a woman, in fact, is a question, because then second wave feminists like Germaine Greer and others would differ, for example, with third wave feminists on who the subject of misogyny even is in the first place. So these are important things to unpack because you know, these are terms that require kind of a treatment before something is, you know, a label is put on them. That's the first thing I would say. The second thing is, in regards to his effect, I think that his effect was preceded in part or in full by a feeling in this country, in particular in the United Kingdom, by men and women, but more so men, that feminism itself has gone too far. And there has been a study that has recently, freshly been carried, and I think it was by Ipsos. In fact, it was by Ipsos, which says that 51% of Gen Z, or 53% of Gen Z and 51% of millennials, males, think that feminism is now discriminating against men. think that feminism has gone too far, for example. This is a study that is not of the Muslim community or the Jewish community or any other specific. Even 41% of females in that study, which was conducted in the University of King's College London, said the same thing. This is actually quite astonishing, considering the fact that we're talking about Andrew Tate, because Andrew Tate and his likes, or the Red Pill movement, or whatever it is, could be said to be somewhat of a corrective to what many in this country see has gone wrong, not just in this country, but throughout the Western world, and maybe even throughout the world at large, which is that feminism is now starting to discriminate against men, according to these studies that I've cited. So Andrew Tate is not the core. I would say it's very difficult to make the case that Andrew Tate is the cause of this entire phenomena. Some studies would have to be produced in order for us to make such a wild claim. Instead, I would say that this phenomena has been kind of festering, bubbling in the background for many years, ever since the 80s and 90s. And Andrew Tate represents what many people already think about the state of gender relations in the Western world today.
And that was based on a study, and you can appreciate that not everyone thinks in that way. I would say maybe a lot of people might disagree. To those people who are then maybe directly affected by misogyny and by these sayings, do we still think that everyone should think in that way? And why are you promoting that way of thinking by suggesting that it doesn't exist? Feminism. As in, you mentioned there's studies and people that support this idea that feminism doesn't exist. You've something that you've spoke about on your channel, and Tate, I would say, kind of, as you said, would sit under the red pill ideology. Are those views being out there and to publics, like to huge follower accounts, put on platforms where young people are watching more than they will go down to their local imam and have these conversations, is that then just like putting that view on them?
Well, first of all, I mean, you said that feminism, many people say feminism doesn't exist. I was not saying that the study said that. The study stated that feminism has gone too far, and that now it's starting to discriminate against men, is what Gen Z, and it was a study that was done recently. This is in the last week it was published. And it was actually made into kind of newspaper articles. You can see in the Telegraph, for example, had an article on it. So that's one thing. The other thing is, as I say, the reason why it's important to define what we mean by misogyny is because, for example, conservative Muslims, Jewish people, for example, Christian people, some conservative Christians, with some difference, of course, and within those religions there is difference as well, they would consider, for example, a differentiation when it comes to gender roles, that the man has certain roles that the woman doesn't, that there are some things that a man should do or the responsibilities that a woman shouldn't have. And to modern day feminist proponents, that could be considered to be a form of discrimination. So when you mentioned the imam, the thing is, according to many of the feminist readings that I've read, I've written a book on feminism called Fifth Wave Feminism, that I've read on an academic level, I believe that if people were to be exposed to the biblical verses, for example, in Leviticus chapter 21, where it's talking about what the punishment should be. In fact, the Bible talks about death penalty being imposed on someone who's done sexual relations. Or even the Quran doesn't mention a death penalty here, but it does mention the immorality of the sexual act itself in chapter 7, verse 81, for example. And these are things that if someone were to go to their local rabbi or local priest or their local imam, that they would, for example, on these issues, on the LGBTQ issues or on the gender rights issues or roles and responsibilities, may offer a response not too dissimilar from that which Andrew Tate himself would bring forth. And I would even take it one step further and say that you'll be surprised at the amount of Muslim women, for example, who believe in these things. I mean, for example, there was, I think it's called the ICM, and this was in 2016, in fact. The ICM conducted a survey on Muslim people on, for example, homosexuality. And you'll be surprised because Andrew Tate, I've looked at his, scoured his record, have not seen anything about homosexuality in particular, where he's going as far as Muslim people have gone, actually. men and women, that only 13% of Muslim people in this country believe that homosexuality should even be legal, men and women. So the point is, these are anti-normative views. And these anti-normative views, whether Andrew Tate is there or not, would have been there already. The question is, are we as the Muslim people, as or the Jewish people or Christian people or others, are we allowed to have those views? If we express those views, would we be now censored? Would we be punished? Should there be a punishment for having that view? Because if the suggestion is that there should be a punishment for that, then I would suggest that pluralism, multiculturalism, and even liberalism itself has failed. Because the idea of pluralism is that you have these individuals in society and groups that have equal ability to express themselves. And if you want to put the liberal harm principle on it, so long as they don't harm anybody else. So me believing, for example, that a man and a woman should have equality of value but not identicality in roles, me believing in this is something which my faith tells me, majority of Muslim people believe in that, majority of Jewish people, Orthodox Jewish, for example, believe in something like that. And so the question is, can I now have this belief freely, or must I be censored? Must I now be? And that's really where the question is today, because woke ideology and the left have taken this too far and privileged the rights of some people over the rights of others. And I think that's where the discussion really is.
And in terms of that, like people having different opinions, you'd say normative, so people having a different alternative view on things, the algorithm will favour people who have those controversial views. They will get more likes, they will get more viewerships because people are interested in what they're saying. But do you think that people are being questioned enough on, or like, are they being questioned enough on their views? For example, your podcast with Tate, you went through a lot of things, but we didn't, and you have mentioned there that you had a chat like away from the podcast on those haram things that he was doing, and whether he is repenting those and whether he will make those changes. Is that something you see in his future now that he has converted and maybe had a bit more education around Quran?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, I hope so. I mean, these are things that the future is something I can't really speculate on. But I think the question I tried to pose to you is as follows, is that now we have these different groups in the United Kingdom, right? You have homosexuals, LGBTQ society, you have Muslims, you have Christians, you have whatever, and there's an overlap between these groups. It's not like this is only one or the other. There's clearly an overlap between those groups as well. Now, what I'm saying is, I personally believe what's happening in mainstream media, because you talk about the algorithm. Now, social media are people like myself, you know, who you know, don't have the financial backing, or only have a camera to my disposal and, you know, people to click subscribe and like and stuff like that. You know, social media is one of the only ways that, for example, Muslim people and others can get a voice, you know, to the mainstream public. But the mainstream media is propagating an entirely different type of discourse, which I believe is exclusionary to conservative Jewish, conservative Muslims, you want to call them that, Orthodox Muslims and so on. And so the question is, can we be allowed to say what we want without reprisal or without being called these names, which will have an impact on our lives and livelihoods, which will have an impact on our job prospects and employability or lack thereof? I think we're finding that there's now draconian or coercive methods, sometimes it can be even worse than this, which have stopped people from having that liberty. And this is where the problem is. The power doesn't lie with us. The power lies with the hegemonic colonial power, which happens to be the United States of America and its extensions and Western Europe, who are propagating an entirely different message. And the message is basically left-wing for the most part. And, and if you don't conform to that, you're attacked. So I don't know if it's... Because the thing is, we're talking about Andrew Tate, for example, but we haven't even outlined exactly what views that we disagree with here. Like, you talk about misogyny, we said it depends on how you define misogyny. But what exactly are the views that he holds? So it can be a bit more haram things. Okay, fine, we agree. Those haram, the webcam and all that kind of the those things, fine, for the sake of argument. But apart from that, his social views, what exactly do you find most troublesome about his views, for example?
His Well, it's not for me personally to speak on as a journalist, but reportedly he thinks that men are the not ulterior. I don't, English is my second language. Basically, that men are higher than women. I'm trying to in English. I don't know. I'm Welsh for some reason. I don't know the actual word. Or higher, or have more respect. Should get more respect or more power than women. I think he's made a claim that men own women. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I mean, I did clarify that one with him, and he did say that he didn't mean it in those terms. So putting that one to the side as well,
You
then.
can see.
Yeah,
You can
it's
see
provocative
how
language,
what his.
which is why I asked him about it on my podcast with him. So he clarified that one now. So let's, for the sake of argument, say that, because he's been asked about that multiple times, and he said that I don't mean it like that. So that's one thing. What else are we talking about here? Now, when you talk about higher, what men are higher than women, in what regard? In physical strength, for example, or in what sense?
This is just what he is thought to have done because of the way that he has spoken about women. The way that he speaks about women has been reported as speaking down to women, not respecting women, and that people have been directly affected or claimed to have sort of been discriminated against because of their gender, because of the effect that he has had on
I get what you're saying,
people from
but
his followers.
with respect to you, you're doing a good job, by the way. I don't want to put you on the spot. I mean, but I'm just, what I'm saying is, with respect to you, you still haven't really given me a strong enough quotation of what he has said that really, you disagree with, or that is disagreeable in the first place. Let's say, like, you say that men is higher than women. I don't know if I come across that exact quote, but let's say, for the sake of argument, he says something like that. It would need to be contextualized. Does he mean it, for example, in the sense of finances, that men have more money than women, more generally speaking, or that they have more physical strength? We'd need to look at what he said. But what I'm saying is that a lot of what he says, the majority of the world agrees with. I mean, this is what I'm saying. For example, in terms of,
Without context.
yeah, no, but what I'm saying is, like, for example, on the issue of traditional families and stuff, go to Africa or go to Asia, or go to and ask them what they think the family should look like. And in fact, get a quotation of Andrew Tate, word for word, about his views on family and the average feminist view on family, or second wave feminist, and present both transcripts to the average Nigerian and see what he has to say. The reason why Andrew Tate is picking up traction is because he's going with the tide, in the sense that he is saying what the majority of the world is saying, but the West has forgotten. That is really why he's become so popular. But this is not new stuff, what he's saying. He's talking about women being, for example, homemakers or mothers of children or something like that. I mean, people will find that offensive. People find this offensive nowadays, Zara. If I were to say to you, for example, Zara, like, I personally believe that, you should be at home, and you should be married to somebody. And
Oh, sorry,
you know,
it just cut out
yeah,
there.
I was saying that if I were to say to you, I think the best role for you is in the house, raising children and so on. To what extent do you find that offensive? If I said the best role.
I can't comment because I'm not the one
No, but
being
yeah, so
interviewed.
no, but I get what I'm saying. But do you see the point? You would agree that
I
many women would
understand
find that if I
your
went to
point.
ITV Studios, right? And the women that are there, career women, and I said, listen, I think I want to make a speech and this and that. And I said, look, I personally believe that the best thing for women here in this thing is that they stay at home and raise their children, and look after them, because this career is not going to give them the kind of happiness that they think is going to give them. Do you not feel like in an average place, maybe in ITV Studios or something like that, that would be seen as offensive to many women in this country?
I feel like in the same way that you say that a lot of people would agree with the alternative view, there'll be a different response across the board because not everyone has the same
No,
view.
I appreciate that, but I'm saying that if you go to Nigeria,
Oh,
or
well, that again, it's
if you,
a kind of a
yeah,
vast
what I'm saying
blanket,
is,
so
if you go to
we
the
can't
Orthodox
assume.
Jewish community, and I make this statement in a synagogue, I'm pretty sure I'd get a
Yes.
response rate which would be completely different from ITV Studios. So what I'm saying is, it's all contextual. It's so he represents is some of his traditional views are actually the majority view in the world, I would say. So the point is, it's difficult to, when someone says misogyny and stuff like that, we really need to know what they're talking about here. Because if they mean that they want to impose their feministic worldview, which is that men have exactly the same roles, and like Ngozi says in the Feminist Manifesto, she says that the exact same rights and exact same responsibilities. And she gave one example, one exception. She says breastfeeding is the exception because it's operationally impossible for a man to breastfeed. I mean, most of the world doesn't agree with this thing. And so if he says something like that, and they say,
Just in the term of like context of misogyny being different for other people, what would you say then if there's a follower of Tate who might not have like be as well versed as what misogyny means in different aspects, someone who just follows Tate because they like the persona that he gives out there, has no interest in learning about what misogyny is, or hasn't just given it the time of day to learn about what that is, and still kind of mimics his behavior or his views, where then would you stand on that? Is it just
his behavior
that they need to get?
That's a theatrical performance. I would stand on it in the same way as I would see any other theatrical performance. You know, as an entertainer, at the end of the day, he's got you speaking about me, about him. So there's clearly, like, you know, whatever he's done to some extent has worked. Otherwise, we wouldn't be having this conversation. And so the point is that it's there to kind of catch people's attention. Most imams on many of the same issues would have a view. Maybe many rabbis would have a view, many priests would have a view, similar if not identical to Tate's, when it comes to the nuclear family, when it comes to gender roles, when it comes to so many of these diagnoses. They would have the same view. They don't have the same charisma as him. They don't have the same way of articulating themselves as he does. And as such, obviously, he's going to get more traction. He's made what's mainstream in the world more mainstream in the West. That's all he's done. He's said the same things as you would hear a Nigerian man, I don't know why I keep bringing Nigerians, or Moroccan man, I think you're from Morocco originally, something like that, right? So a Moroccan man sitting, drinking his tea, he'd say the same things on some of the issues relating to the issue. And if a feminist were to see that Moroccan man or that Nigerian man, you know, or our forefathers living in North Africa, they would say this guy is misogynist. So, I mean, so when this label is overused, it has no meaning anymore. And so, Andrew Tate, we need to know, okay, some of the stuff is questionable, and I agree. But some of the stuff that really people have a problem with, quite frankly, are the same things that the majority of the world believes in. And so the controversy is only within our shores and within the Western world. It shouldn't be, we shouldn't really necessarily think that, this is something unremarkable. He's coming to something remarkable. This is completely unremarkable. What some of the stuff he's saying, traditional family and this kind of crisis of masculinity. So much so that, as I've mentioned, Ipsos says that the majority of British people think feminism has gone too far and is discriminating against men, Gen Z and millennials. So, yeah, I don't necessarily think that he's... a lot of the stuff...
Conscious of time, so I'm just going to go on to the next question, if that's okay with you. And also, just to mention, if this does time out, I'll just send an extra link so we can carry on the conversation, because I don't want to miss anything out. But you mentioned there labels, and from a lot of things that I've read about you, and you might not be too happy about it, but your name will probably crop up with the terms Akrite Bro, Red Pill, and things like that. What is your interpretation of what those things mean, and why do you think that people are associating you with those?
I know there was one particular article that was written, and the person that was consulted was an individual who I excommunicated from the religion of Islam because of his aberrational views. So he had a personal vendetta against me, and he was consulted. And all this is on the public record, and he made these labels. So I don't think it's their prominent or widespread labels, and not least because obviously I've actually done videos against Red Pill ideology itself, and I've called it very strong language. I think it was abominable. I used the word abominable, abhorrent, or something like that. And the reason why I think that the Red Pill ideology is abominable or abhorrent is because of its decadence, because of the things that it calls for. There isn't a strong objectification of women, for example, which we don't agree with. The kind of language that is recommended in Red Pill manuals and books and so on for us to use, for example, as men with women, is not even language that majority of the same men would use or allow to be used for their daughters or their mothers. So I think that it's a reactionary movement, but at the same time, it does carry a lot of truth. and in my opinion, way more truth than a religion. Oh, well, you can call it a religion, but and a political ideology like feminism, in terms of its scientific backing, its statistical backing, and so on. Having said that, I do think it has some very negative elements. Once again, I've mentioned the decadence. I've mentioned some of the things that go against our vision of a vision of a moral society. For instance, this idea of they say you can let your wife go and have an open relationship with her, or stuff like that, and or this idea, this obsession with body counts. Sorry to say, but body counts, like as in how many women a man sleeps with. These are things, most, I would say, clearly, is that we do everything for the sake of God. We believe that God is all-knowing, all-hearing, all-wise. And that the reasons why we act in a certain way with our wives or with our daughters or with anything else is because we believe that God has instructed us to do that. Red pill doesn't have this religious impetus or component at all. So there are so many aspects of red pill ideology which contradict Islam, contradict what it means to be a good person in the religion of Islam, and therefore we are opposed to those aspects as well. People labeling me as these things after I've mentioned all that in clear-cut fashion, I think is a good example of how the narrative is attempting, or people are trying to malign the narrative in their favor, really.
So you do not identify with any of those labels. And when, like, Akarite bro is kind of a modern word now that I haven't really seen around. What's your interpretation of what that means, and kind of why do you think you're now seen as one?
As I mentioned, I think it's only been mentioned by like one obscure figure who has a personal vendetta with me on a CNN article that was published, and he was consulted. This particular individual, I excommunicated from the religion of Islam because on the basis of him allegorizing stories of the Quran and saying that these are not actually things that happen. So I said that for me, such a person is not a Muslim. I'm allowed to have that opinion, and I do. So he proceeded to, smear with me with these names, and that's fine. I mean, I consider him a disbeliever. He considers me a right wing. I think I would rather take the right wing label than the disbeliever label anyway. But having said that, I mean, there are many aspects of Islam, and I've made another video. It's a shorts, actually, 1 minute video. Is Islam right wing or left wing? And what I said in that shorts is that it's neither, and we shouldn't think of Islam in those terms. For example, part of right wing ideology, as you may know, is immigration policies. Many people are very much opposed to immigration in right wing circles, whereas Islam is essentially a cosmopolitan religion. It's actually the most multicultural religion in the face of the planet. And so we don't have the same citizen-centered approach, nationalistic approach as many people on the right have, for instance. And on the left wing, of course, socially, we're very far away from those things that, I've mentioned in this interview relating to gender roles and homosexuality and so on. And so Islam is neither left or right wing. And I believe that asking the question of whether Islam is left or right wing itself has colonial undertones, almost as if all morality should be within the scope of left and right wing constructions, put forward by the white man. I personally believe that such constructions are only applicable to a very, select type of social reasoning that is employed in the political discourses in the West. Shouldn't be generalized to you're either right wing or left wing or centrist. I'm neither of those things or any of those things. And I don't think Islam is either.
We'll move on. I think we've got about 3 minutes, so I'll skip to the end. And it's basically, where do you see you and Tate's relationship now in terms of, for example, if you came out and was able to do like podcasts, anything like that again, would you be welcoming with him with open arms, or is that dependent on how he has chosen to live his life at that point?
I support Andrew Tate in as much as he supports Islam. And I would say the same thing about any human being on the face of the earth. I support that person as much as they support Islam, or they believe in it, or they support it, or they don't discriminate against it. And so if he continues with the religion of Islam, he will find me as one of his supporters. The Quran actually mentions this explicitly. وَالْمُؤْمِنُونَ وَالْمُؤْمِنَاتِ بَعْضُهُمْ أَوْلِيَاءَ بَعْضٍ. That the believers, believing men and women actually, men and women, explicitly men and women, both of them are allies of one another. And so we have a relationship of allyship. We have an allyship with anybody who decides to enter the religion of Islam or support it. So my relationship with Andrew Tate, so much as he is a member of my community, is one of support, just as much as had I been a member of the LGBTQ society or community and Andrew Tate, sorry to say, had become a homosexual, I am sure that he would not be discriminated against as a homosexual by the LGBTQ community, that they would welcome him with open arms, and they may even decide to forgive him for his, if you like, prior sins according to their worldview. So I don't see that this is an issue, because there are multiple subcultures in the United Kingdom, and there are multiple ways of being, communities, and all of them have their hierarchization or prioritization in favor of their own belief system first and foremost, and their community in addition to that. So to answer your question directly, I would support Andrew Tate in as much as he supports the religion of Islam, and that would mean in any way possible, legal, PR perspective or anything else. And I would do the same thing with any human being, man or woman or child, on the face of the earth.
Okay, it's letting me do it, so that's great. I know that we touched a bit on that, that you, it doesn't matter who Andrew Tate was, if that was an LGBT person, a woman, that they would, again, be welcome with open arms on your channel. But do you think that is the general view? So, for example, if Tate was a woman, had done it, had lived the exact same lifestyle as he was, and had then converted to Islam, do you think that he would have been welcomed in the same way?
There were people like Sinead O'Connor, who had lived decadent lifestyles, from our perspective, who was not only welcomed into Islam and the communities, conservative communities, male-dominated ones, but they were actually even added into the list of most influential Muslims on the earth. Like, for example, Sinead O'Connor, from what I've seen, she's in the list of 500 most influential Muslims. And so the answer, in short, is absolutely. And there is precedent for that. In terms of my own discussions, as I mentioned at the very beginning of this interview, that actually I have had discussions with feminists, and I've had discussions with people who identify as transgender and Muslim at the same time, which was actually very controversial in my community when I did this. But my mantra is that I will speak to anybody. I don't mind who it is, and that is because the religion of Islam, or the message of Islam, should be one that we could promote or convey to anybody, whoever they are, from whatever background. So this allegation that many have been trying to put forward, that, well, this is, he's getting some kind of preferential treatment, is not only far away from the truth, it's actually ahistorical when you look at the recent contemporary conversions to Islam, people becoming Muslim, men and women. So yes, the answer is yes. If it was a woman, if it was someone who's transgender, if it was anybody, whatever sexual orientation they may have or whatever, they are most welcome to speak to us in a discussion format, in a non-interrogative way, just like me and you are having a discussion now. And if they become Muslim, then yes, the same rule applies to them as well.
Skipped a bit. Oh, well, would say Tate, he comes out of jail, given that that happens, and decides to revert back to some of the haram things that he was doing, and living in like a non-Islamic lifestyle. What would be your take on that then?
Well, I mean, we believe if something is done publicly, it must be refuted publicly. I would say that at that point, after he has been given, if you like, a probationary period, that the Muslim community would need to clarify that these things are not something which Islam actually allows. whether or not Andrew Tate does it or anybody else. If Mohammed Hijab does it, if my friends do it, if something is done publicly, it must be corrected publicly. And so this is the general rule, but with new Muslims, we have more of a compassionate approach, and we give people time to make the changes in their life.
So you wouldn't speak out on that, given a certain amount of time has passed?
Yeah, I would. I may, depending on the severity of the sin. Obviously, like we're talking about, if something is said which, for example, contradicts the teachings of Islam, that needs to be corrected. If something is done which is one of the major sins and is done publicly, then that needs to be corrected publicly. This is the general rule. It's called al-amr bil ma'ruf wa nahy anil munkar. So I would be happy to correct those things, but after a process has been had, and I've got direct communication with Andrew Tate. Many of the things that he's accused of, I speak to him on WhatsApp. Well, not anymore for now, but you know, and I ask him what he intended by this and that. And the point is simply that I think that we need to give the man time to make the changes. And maybe he comes out of prison a changed man. He may have a completely different parlance. He may have a different way of thinking, because Islam would change him if he followed it properly. It would have to change him. Islam would change a lot of his behaviors, a lot of his even attitudes and beliefs. There are even some beliefs that he carries now which are not Islamic in the strictest sense. And obviously, that needs time for him to realize that he needs to align himself with the Islamic teachings.
And to Tate followers who might be thinking about converting to Islam, to follow Tate in his and his basically like a life path and life journey, do you think that, well, for one, do you think that will happen? Do you think there'll be an effect of people who are non-Islamic joining Islam? And then do you think that their intentions will be correct, or are they doing it just because they want to be like Tate?
I can't judge someone's intention, but it's already happening. Yeah. People are coming into Islam because of him.
I've seen it happening.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's happening where you are, but it's certainly happening where we are. And a lot of them come and they become very, very religious. And that's why I say, I believe that's a force of good, that in the sense that he's a force of good in that sense. If they followed the Islamic teachings, they would realize where Andrew Tate himself is following the Islamic teachings and when he's not. So Islam is a religion which is not about following personalities, except for the personality of the Prophet Muhammad and the rest of the prophets. So we believe in that the ultimate guides for humanity are the prophets, the figures, the protagonists in the Quran. Then after that, you've got the companions of the prophet and so on, but certainly the prophets. And so we believe that if someone follows Islam, they should be trying to imitate the prophets. I mean, if you consider all of the metrics that Andrew Tate has achieved, I mean, the Prophet Muhammad, we would say, has achieved no less than a million times more than him, whether it be in influence. I mean, we're talking about Prophet Muhammad now, 1,400 years, whether it be in demographic influence, whether we're talking about military prowess and ability, whether we're talking about managing relationships. He has managed 9 relationships at one time. He was in a very hard kind of polygamous marriage with women that he took on, not to use and abuse, but we would say he took them on for strategic reasons, as a caretaker, as a helper of society. And so we believe that the Prophet Muhammad is the ultimate role model for those individuals who want to follow Andrew Tate, therefore, from the Muslim community and other else. I would actually say that this is the wrong kind of move. Instead, one should be following the Prophet Muhammad, who Andrew Tate himself is now trying to follow. I mean, why would you follow someone who is following someone else for his guidance? Why not just follow the ultimate source of the guidance, or let's just say the ultimate source of the ultimate role model, which is the Prophet Muhammad, who Andrew Tate himself recognizes is a greater person than he is in every respect. So I would say no, you should follow the Prophet Muhammad.
You can't deny the power of influence. Like, it just gets people, like, everyone's talking about them, everyone wants to watch them. They are seen as kind of these icons within like modern society. Is that then wrong then that you would iconize people as role models, as in people who aren't prophets? Is that a healthy thing to think of someone as a role model?
We have a saying from one of the companions of the Prophet, which says that if you want to follow someone, his name is Ibn Mas'ud, he said, if you want to follow someone who has died, because the living one has not yet passed the tribulations of life. The point is, I would always advise, someone who's completed the test and done everything is a better person to follow than someone who's still being tested. We don't know what Andrew Tate is going to do in the next 5 years. He might apostate from the religion of Islam. He may become a feminist. He may be, anything can happen. So all I'm saying is, following such a person would bring about a series of problems. And so instead, we would say to Muslim people in particular to follow the Prophet Muhammad, men and women as well, actually, to follow the Prophet Muhammad. So yes, it does bring about problems when you follow anyone who's living, from our perspective. But then again, we would say Andrew Tate is an individual who is manifesting a series of attributes which men have been deprived of seeing in and having role model to them. Gallantness, courageousness, great articulation. He embodies a lot of what is could be seen classically as, like, you know, the intellectual warrior type. Intellectual because he's clever in some aspects and he can play chess and these kinds of things, but at the same time he can put up a good fight, and that in many ways that's what a man wants to be. He wants to be an intellectual warrior, and so from those angles, looking at Andrew Tate or anybody else who has these set of characteristics for inspiration, I don't think is an unhealthy thing for people to do, so long as they're able to sieve that out from all the things which are more problematic in his personality.
And how, just to close now, how important is it that we separate views and opinions of people, be that things that their core beliefs as human beings, to words of the Quran, to Islam, as it's in its full form? Is it wrong to be drawing narratives, i.e. like that if someone is misogynistic, they're trying to justify that with words of the Quran?
But as I've mentioned before, misogyny itself is a buzzword that requires definition. So,
in maybe not misogyny, but anything, I don't know, any problematic views.
Yeah.
And that's an interpretation, right?
Yeah, I mean, some...
What problematic is for different people.
Look, we're living in an age where in the post-enlightenment period in the Western world, we have a phenomena where people now are influenced by red pill ideology, they're influenced by feminism, liberalism, and so many other things. And they don't want to admit their influence of these things, but they certainly are influenced, men, women, and children, okay? And when they are, for example, subscribers, let's say, to a religious faith group like Islam, Muslim people, sometimes you can have the phenomena of trying to superimpose what is referred to in hermeneutics as eisegesis, to put words into the Quran or try and find things from the Quran in order to try and justify their positions. This is problematic. We would say it's a hermeneutical problem. And so to answer your question directly, yes, I think it is a phenomenon that's happening. People try and justify their positions by quoting verses of the Quran, cherry picking them and leaving other things out. And that does happen in the field of gender as well. Men and women do it. And people that are influenced by feminism or red pill or whatever other ideology do it as well. What we must do, if we're true Muslims, is go to the Quran and the holy texts and let it speak for itself. Try not to be influenced by anything else. Try and genuinely let it speak for itself and not try and have basically, you know, an entitlement schema that allows us to take that which benefits us and leave off that which doesn't.
That conducts all my questions. Thank you for answering so honestly.
You're welcome.